You are listening to a special pre-recorded episode of the Four Persons Show. Though we will not be taking live calls tonight, we want to answer any questions or comments you may have. Drop us a line at email at thefourpersons.com.
Welcome to The Tangled Knot with Deb Rojas. With the help of our Heavenly Mother Mary, undoer of knots, Deb seeks to help us untangle the knots we find, and often cause, in our own lives. Deborah Rojas, MS, is a psychotherapist and mental health counselor at Integrity Counseling Services. A graduate of Divine Mercy University, Deborah utilizes a variety of approaches within a Catholic Christian framework, depending on the needs of the client. These approaches include cognitive behavioral therapy, internal family systems, emotion-focused therapy, forgiveness therapy, person-centered therapy, gestalt techniques, and narrative therapy. She specializes in women's issues, relationship trauma, spiritual trauma, physical and sexual trauma, anxiety and depression, and grief and loss. She also works with priests, pastors, and seminarians, drawing from her background of over 20 years of working in both Protestant and Catholic churches. For more information about Deb and Integrity Counseling, please visit them at integritycounselingpa.com. Once again, the address is integritycounselingpa.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Deb Rojas.
Hello and welcome to The Tangled Knot. I am your host, Deb Rojas, and delighted to have you listening today. I'm here with my friend and co-host, Dr. Fred Boley. Welcome, Fred.
Hello.
Here at The Tangled Knot, we like to consider how Mary, undoer of knots, aids us in helping to deal with the tangled messes of life. So if there are issues in your life that are difficult with friends, family, work, maybe an estranged child. There are so many different messes that we get into that are causes deep pain. And so we like to talk about these things on the show. And delighted to welcome my guest tonight, Ken Garcia. Welcome, Ken.
Glad to be here. It's an honor.
Thank you so much for joining us. I've been very excited about having you on. We will be talking to Ken tonight about Pilgrim River, a spiritual memoir, which is a story of his conversion. Ken is an incredible writer. I particularly love the geographical descriptions, the detailed geographical descriptions. Just drew me right into the scenes. But also the spiritual depth. The emotional and psychological depth. You paint the picture of conversion beautifully, Ken. So thank you for sharing your story so honestly and openly.
Thank you. Thank you for those kind words.
I'm really looking forward to talking with you about that tonight. I've enjoyed our Facebook Messenger discussions.
Yes. Yes, have I.
They've been mutually encouraging. And so Fred is also a convert.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Well, I started in the Baptist church. My parents were evangelical missionaries from sort of a Baptist background. Ah. And later on, I joined the Church of England, and I was living over in England, and became a Catholic in 2015.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I grew up Baptist, the daughter of a Baptist preacher man. And so that was, I grew up in the church, literally, like in the church building almost.
Yeah.
We spent so much time there. Coming to the church from a place of a lot of love for God in my family and scripture knowledge and holiness. Mm-hmm. You know, so Ken, your conversion story was strikingly different in comparison.
Yes, indeed it was. It was a very kind of an unusual path that my life took. Do you want me to mention a few things about the memoir?
I would love if you would just introduce it. So the memoir again is Pilgrim River, and I would highly recommend that everybody.
What is that word you're saying there, Deb? What river?
Pilgrim.
Pilgrim River.
P-I-L-G-R-I-M. Pilgrim River. Ken, if you could say again.
Who's the publisher?
Who's the publisher?
It's Angelico Press.
Angelico. Okay.
Angelico. Yeah. All right.
So right, yeah,
would you like me to interrupt you some more?
You know, I would love it.
Whenever you talk. Sorry, I'll shut up now.
Just don't interrupt Ken, okay?
Okay.
So yeah, Ken, if you could just introduce yourself and also your story, we'd love to hear it.
All right. Well, I'm a native of northeastern Nevada, a small rural town of Elko. Mm-hmm. We were about 3,000 or 4,000 people when I was growing up. And mm-hmm. it's situated right in the middle of the Great Basin Desert, you know, with just wide open spaces and vast horizons, hills, deserts, mountains, for hundreds of miles in every direction.
Huh.
But growing up, you know, during my childhood and adolescence, my siblings were completely devoid of any kind of religious belief. Hmm. I mean, and it's not that my family was explicitly anti-religious. I mean, I knew about Christmas because we celebrated it, although mm-hmm. more as a secular cultural holiday, time for, you know, getting gifts especially, but also giving. And I knew I didn't really know the meaning of Christmas, though.
Mm-hmm.
We did have Easter Sunday feasts, but all I really knew about Easter was, you know, the Easter bunny who hid eggs that we got to go look for.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when I got to be an early teen, I had seen movies like The Ten Commandments and
mm-hmm.
The and so I, you know, I got an inkling of the gospel story and, you know, the life of Moses and everything. But I had never read the Bible at all until mm-hmm. I was in my early 20s. And I began it, my spiritual journey at that time, in my early 20s, because that's when God revealed himself to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not through the traditional means of, say, you know, reading Holy Scripture or hearing a powerful sermon or, you know, being evangelized. I
mm-hmm.
wasn't evangelized at all. I had never heard a homily. But really, it was through the awesome beauty of the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I grew up in the Great Basin Desert of Nevada, kind of real close to the middle of nowhere. You know, just surrounded by desert, rugged hills, mountain ranges, you know, just vast horizons of silent, uninhabited spaces. And then, just by chance, or maybe by God's design, I had the leisure of spending a year or two of just solitary hiking and reading and contemplating in those vast, silent spaces.
Mm.
And that really transformed my life because I encountered the Holy Spirit there. Mm.
Huh.
And in addition to the, I mean, and I don't know if I used the word Holy Spirit, I would have used the word God or just Spirit, you know, but not in a Christian sense because...
Mm-hmm.
And I would have used the word God because I kind of knew what that meant. And, you know, we're all made in the image and likeness of God. So
mm-hmm.
it's there. We recognize it even when we're not paying attention. But and then at the same time that I was making these solitary hikes in the natural world, I was very influenced by the writings of the French Jesuit Pierre Teilhard de Chardin.
Oh, yeah.
Who was a mystic and who saw cosmic evolution as the work of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And the development of the universe as a gradual, kind of a gradual process of joining together through love of all things in the universe into one whole, which would be the cosmic Christ or the omega point. And I was just carried away with Teilhard's rich integration of scientific and religious thought and the, you know, the beauty and power of his prose too.
Mm.
And somehow I understood his vision of cosmic evolution, though I didn't really get the Christ part of it.
Mm.
Well, I thought of that as just something kind of superfluous.
So can I interrupt you there at that point?
Sure.
It sounds like in his writing there was a deep sense of the transcendence that spoke to you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm curious if within that you also had a sense that there was, even if you couldn't name him as God at that point, a sense of someone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Sure. And I would have probably used the word God.
Okay.
And the word spirit, with a capital S.
Mm-hmm.
But still not really knowing anything about Christianity. Mm-hmm. And even though Christian imagery pervades Teilhard de Chardin's work, it didn't mean anything to me. You know, I just didn't get the connections.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But anyway, during this period of my life, you know, I was kind of slowly being infused with this.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the only way I could describe it is a kind of divine energy, spirit that transformed and even overwhelmed my life.
Mm-hmm. Like the Holy Spirit who he breathed over the dry bones, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he was breathing into you and into your heart and waking you up.
Yeah. I once tried to write a novel. I tried to be a fiction writer and I was no good at it. But I began the novel with the opening phrase. It went something like this. I slept for the first 20 years of my life and woke up in a desert. My words had no ancestors, my deeds no Lord. I was a wild man, a savage. I called out into the vast desert, but received no reply, not even an echo. Then night came and darkness came into the void. Something like that. And that's how I started it, because that's how I kind of experienced my early life, you know, until I found, I got a response from my calling out, I guess. I got a word back from the spirit. But anyway, when I say I was overwhelmed, I mean that in a, you know, both in a good, ecstatic way, but also in a problematic way, because, you know, I wasn't raised in any religion. So I didn't know what to do with that, you know, effusion of psychic, spiritual energy. You know, I didn't have a wisdom tradition, you know, a religious tradition with which to make sense of it all, to give a context for it all. You know, it wasn't until 8 years later or so that I kind of stumbled my way into the Catholic Church and was baptized and confirmed at age 29 when I was living in Southwest Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could just point out one more thing, I know you have a lot of other questions. In the memoir, I bookend the memoir with the same metaphors which I've kind of been talking about, which make up the book's title, Pilgrim River, or actually three images: the ocean, which I always use with without the definite article, and the second is a barren desert, which remained after the ocean drained away, and a river that runs to the desert, struggling sometimes, you know, just to be a river in its search for the ocean, but never finds it, because in the Great Basin, all the waters run into the basin, but they never find their way back out. You know, most rivers in the world find a way eventually into the ocean, but not in the Great Basin. They just run into these flat lands, alkali flats, and these very shallow lakes in the spring, and which then just evaporate or sink into the ground, leaving these alkali flats everywhere. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Burning Man Festival.
Sure.
That takes place in one of these alkali flats in northwestern Nevada, called the Black Rock Desert. And it's just a flat land, and it's white because of the salt and sand there. But anyway, I mean, and those kinds of lake beds, you know, alkali flats, you can find all throughout Nevada. So, but anyway, the metaphor, you know, again, of the ocean and the Pilgrim River, you know, comes from the geography of the land I grew up in. And it's a region that geologists call it an endorheic region, which means, you know, as I said, the water, all rain or snowfall that comes into it never goes back out again. And I think of it as too maybe a suitable metaphor for someone like me on the spectrum between extreme introversion and mild autism, you know, which can sometimes impede my spiritual quest and in the carrying out of God's calling for my life. So that's kind of the, and I use that image of the ocean and the river, Pilgrim River, in the first couple paragraphs of the prologue and then the last few paragraphs of the book.
Yeah, I'm hoping you can read a couple of selections for us today as well, while we have you here.
We will be back to the Tangled Knot with Deb Rojas on the Four Persons Network in just a moment. The Four Persons Inc. is a registered 501c3 nonprofit. It is our goal to bring you the very best Catholic content possible, including great contributors like Deb. Going forward, we will continue to bring you great apologists, great educational content, devotionals, Catholic books, and live charitable and social outreach activism. To continue to keep bringing you this great program, we need your help. All of our members are volunteering their time and effort, but it costs money to pay for all of the things connected with our shows, podcasts, and articles. Please take a moment to donate. Our online credit card platform is not yet running, but you can send your tax-deductible gift to the Four Persons Inc., P.O. Box 11214, Manassas, Virginia, 20113. The address again is the Four Persons Inc., P.O. Box 11214, Manassas, Virginia, 20113. If you would like to advertise your business on our programs, or if you have any comment or question of any kind, please email us at email@thefourpersons.com or call us at 240-728-6531. Thank you.
You know, you talk a lot about how, you know, the time that you spent out in nature really helped you think and become aware. And it strikes me that today we have a lot less of that awareness of nature, because we're not even looking out. We're more so looking at a screen, or we're looking down, or we're, you know, like so consumed with looking inward that we can't look out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And most people live at a far removed from what we call the natural world, you know, you know, I mean, there are parks and cities and things like that and river trails, which were wonderful. I think that's a shame. I think that's a real loss.
For sure.
You probably know this. In ancient and medieval Christians, you know, theologians and mystics wrote about the two books of God. The first book is, of course, the, you know, Holy Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And the second book is the book of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And both mm-hmm. books point to and reveal something transcendent beyond themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it'd be better to say that they point to and reveal something that is both transcendent and immanent in the world. Because, you know, in the ancient medieval world, Christians believe that God, the splendor of God shines through everywhere, through every pore of the world. But sometimes we don't see it because we're just not well disposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and thus grace somehow grabs a hold of us and says, look at this, behold this splendor and beauty that is mine, you know.
So can I ask you a question, Ken?
Sure.
Why is it you think that you wound up in the Catholic Church when other people go out into nature and wind up as pagans?
Yeah, that's a good question.
How did that happen?
It's absolutely true. I suppose early on, because I didn't know anything about Christianity, I mean, I very much tended toward a nature mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of had a predilection for New Age spiritualities, but I also started reading the word text, the source text of the major religious traditions. So, you know, the Bible, the Quran.
Was that just because of intellectual curiosity?
Just curiosity, and I just felt, you know, the spirit guiding me to know more and more. About spiritual life, religious life, and you know the spiritual traditions of humankind, and so you know I read the Upanishads and the Analects of Confucius and the Tao Te Ching, and I found wonderful things in all of those books.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the Catholic Church, it's interesting because my conception or my overall attitude toward Catholicism was that I had friends in my hometown that I grew up with. They were Basques. They had very close-knit families. They were all Catholic, very Catholic. And they were warm and welcoming, and they, adopted all the stray ragamuffin like me, I was always welcome in their homes.
Mm.
And then I spent part of, 8 years living in Mexico, where I experienced the Mexican people to be very warm and welcoming. And they were also very Catholic. Mm. And in fact, Catholicism in Mexico especially is just integrated into all of life, at least in smaller towns anyway, probably not so much large cities anymore. But the whole liturgical year of festivals is public. You have the before Christmas you have Las Posadas, where a man dressed up like Saint Joseph is leading a donkey on which sits a young girl dressed in white, Mary. And they are going to Bethlehem looking for an inn, which is a posada in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go through the streets of the town, and they go from door to door, and people say, sorry, we have no room at the inn. So they go on to another place. And until they finally get to the home that's designated as the place that has a room. And then so everyone is... half the townspeople are following in procession along with this. And then they go in and have a big fiesta in the backyard of these people, it's been prepared, and there's music chanting, and the Stations of the Cross, you know, during Lent are all public occurrences. You know, there people are carrying crosses through the town and up the hillside, you know, and it's all very public, and it's just wonderful. It's so integrated. And I guess it was that aspect of Catholicism that drew me into it. You know, it was not something doctrinal or anything like that, which I really didn't know very much about. I mean, I knew a little, but not very much. You know, so it wasn't anything like that that drew me in. It was that kind of warm, welcoming culture that just pervaded all aspects of people's lives.
So it's the community of the liturgy being lived out in the culture, in the town.
In the culture, publicly, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, not just in the church.
Yeah. That's powerful. And that's something that we really often in our modern experience, you know, of the faith. Can you hear me, Fred?
No, I cut out just then.
I'm just, the community factor is something that's often lacking in modern parish culture.
Right.
And so it's, you know, especially, you know, we all have that longing for community. Mm-hmm. Even though, Ken, you like to take those long solitary hikes.
So I wonder if that's a true more of a Northern Anglo-American type church, Deb. Maybe the fabric of our society is kind of built, as a lot of people say, around the car now rather than around people.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it hard for us to have that community. You know, I've got to drive 20 or 25 miles to get to Mass.
Wow.
And this one is true of a lot of people here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more tricky to have that, I think, sense of community.
Yeah.
Ken, can I ask you another question?
Uh-oh, did we lose him?
I'm not hearing Ken. I don't know if you can hear us, Ken, but I can't hear you. Well, anyway, if you recognize and realize we are not hearing you, Ken, call back in and we will continue the discussion. Sorry, Deb, you were about to say something.
I was, but I forget what I was going to say and my concern for losing Ken.
It's about community and being spaced far apart. And
well, I was just thinking how lucky I am that I can walk. I have the closest Mass is a 7-minute walk.
Nice.
And then another great one is a 7-minute drive. You know, so within that, there's a lot of opportunity for community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping we can get Ken back on because he talks about a point after his conversion where he really struggled psychologically and how it affected his relationship with God. And I think that would be particularly helpful for our listeners. So maybe you can bump him off and then have him call back again.
All right, I'm going to do it.
All right.
I'm bumping you off, Ken. Call right back. So Ken is not with us for the moment.
Okay. But we will look forward to welcoming him back. Yes, he has a chapter called The Valley of Shadows. In which he talks about this particular period of his life.
So he taught at Notre Dame, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what it was that he taught? What was his field?
I do not. We'll have to get
I'm really
that
curious to ask him.
Mm-hmm.
And also, how did he find a year to walk around and contemplate? And also, how did he get reading Teilhard de Chardin?
I would have asked that too.
All right, Ben, welcome back.
You can hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good.
There'll be a reception with you.
So we were just talking about you while you were calling back in.
That's why my ear was
burning. One of the things we were talking about was maybe it's the Anglo church, the Northern American church, that finds it hard to do the community thing. And possibly that's because this is a society that's built around the car rather than around people, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So many people
today. Yeah.
So did you find that when you came back to North America and started to become Catholic? Did you find it was a little bit less friendly or community-centered, or what do you think?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, when I was young, I didn't have words to explain it, and, you know, I didn't know what was wrong, why I wasn't a happy kid, you know. But I have to say, I never really felt at home living in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I grew up in a strong family with a strong, you know, religious and a loving atmosphere. You know, it just, I never felt at home. I always felt alienated. Whereas when I lived in Mexico, I did kind of feel at home.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, amongst Catholic friends,
mm-hmm.
I do feel at home as well. So,
mm-hmm. So you, that might be a good segue into, you know, why it was so difficult for you to feel at home. In your chapter, The Valley of Shadows, where you talk about some of your struggles with depression and some of, like just reconciling the story of your family life. You know, I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about that and also how it affected your view of God.
Yeah. Well, I had a very unhappy family life. You know, I came from a very dysfunctional family.
Hmm.
I don't think it really had any influence on my vision of God or my view of God, because in my early years I didn't really have a view of God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was older, and you know, I had moved out of the house, and my parents were separated and everything. So. You know, that's when I came in. I was going to say found God, but I think, mm-hmm. you know, God found me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't think it influenced my, concept of God, but, you know, the very ecstatic experiences that I had for a year or two or so, you know, disappeared after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do with it. You know, I mean, most people maybe would have gone to a minister or a priest or something and then tried to discern a vocation. But I didn't even know what any of that meant.
Looking for a Catholic counselor? Dr. Peter Klopones, Deb Rojas, and the team at Integrity Counseling Services provide faithful Catholic counseling in Pennsylvania and beyond. We offer telehealth and in-person counseling for porn addiction, betrayal trauma, anxiety, depression, marriage counseling, and much more. You can find us at integritycounselingpa.com or 610-601-9781. That's integritycounselingpa.com or 610-601-9781.
Looking for a Catholic counselor or coach? Dr. Fred Boley provides faithful Catholic counseling and coaching for men in Missouri and beyond. He conveniently offers telehealth services for anxiety, depression, marriage counseling, or just getting stuff done. You can find him at stbarn.org or 872-269-1280. Once again, the number is 872-269-1280.
She is a Catholic recording artist, multi-award winning songwriter. She sings contemporary and folk rock music. She has been in the music industry for over 5 years. Her music is her ministry. She aims to help people that suffer from all kinds of pain in life and try to bring them to the Lord through her music. She has 3 albums out, and her music is being played on radio stations all over the world. Her website is lisamarienicole.com, and she is on social media. Her music page is facebook.com Lisa Songs of Worship. YouTube at Lisa M. Nicole. Instagram Lisa_Marie_Nicole_official. Her songs can be purchased on her website, iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, and everywhere else. Her merchandise store has everything for her ministry and can be accessed through her website. Her new CDs will be available very soon and can be purchased through her website. She counts herself blessed that God has chosen her to help spread his message. She is Lisa Marie Nicole. Get her music today.
Amazon Books had the following to say about Ken Garcia's Pilgrim River. Pilgrim River echoes Merton's The Seven-Story Mountain and Augustine's Confessions. Yet, in its evocations of the natural world and its honest depiction of a tortured journey toward hope and love, it stands alone. Pilgrim River candidly narrates one man's wandering but sincere attempt to come to terms with the overpowering experience of God, a journey from unbelief to nature mysticism in the deserts and mountains of Nevada and Utah, to sojourns through the country of marriage and the Republic of Letters, and finally to the Catholic Church. The road followed is crooked, plagued by a lack of spiritual guides and mentors, by isolation and depression, by a failed first marriage, but present throughout is a groping toward spiritual fulfillment, alternately tortured, hopeful, and bathed in luminescence. Many spiritual seekers, including those who consider themselves spiritual but not religious, will benefit from the telling of this unorthodox journey to Christianity. Written with the naturalistic zeal of Annie Dillard and the confessional spirit of St. Augustine, Pilgrim River is the story of an ordinary life's extraordinary journey. It is a story of pursuing, and being pursued by, God. I finished the last page with a lump in my throat that won't quickly go away, Nancy Nordenson.
If you wish to purchase this book, please click the link in the show notes to this show.
And so I just kind of withdrew into myself, and you know, to be honest, I went insane and, you know, had to seek out psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not good at talk psychotherapy, just because I'm not a good conversationalist. Mm-hmm. And I never know what to say when I'm talking to a psychiatrist. You know, you've got to put out your problems and articulate them well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do that unless I've had a chance to kind of think about and prepare for what I want to say beforehand. Mm-hmm. And so I went to a psychiatrist in Salt Lake City, Utah, I think twice a month. And I hardly said a word. Mm-hmm. We ended up doing dream work. And I'd bring
dreams. How old you were at that time, Ken?
How old?
Yeah.
24, 25 maybe.
So were you in graduate school or working or what were you doing?
No, I was not doing anything at the time. I was in a hunting accident when I was 20, and I came into some insurance money from that, which enabled me to live on my own without working at all for about 4 years.
I gotcha.
So anyway, the main thing I got out of the psychotherapy at that time was that the doctor put me on antidepressants and tranquilizers, which I needed. I don't think I slept more than 3 hours a night, and I was just so wound up and hot. You know, so those helped me, although the antidepressants were one of the early, you know, what do they call them, tricyclic interesting, Tofranil. And boy, I really hated them. I just hated the effect they had on me.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also very helpful. And the psychiatrist, started asking me why am I not dating? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I had dated a lot when I was in high school, but I hadn't for several years. And I said, well, I just don't think girls like me. you know, I just become so reclusive and incommunicative, and almost, you know, kind of a specter. And he said, "Why did they all?" And he said, "I'll go back to college." And I hadn't. I thought, "Oh yeah, I can do that." And so I went back to college, and that's where I met my first wife. And you know, it was a marriage that didn't last long, 4 years only, but it brought a lot of healing to both me and to my wife. And then, you know, even later in life, I've gone through psychotherapy a couple of times, but I don't know that it helped me. You know, what I really want to do is I want to write out a 5-page essay on what I'm thinking and feeling and send it in to the therapist. About it once I got there, because I can't get it out when I'm there in person.
I have some clients who do that, Ken.
What's that? Oh, is that right? Yeah.
I do. Yeah. They find it helpful to write it out and send it to me ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then it kind of frees us. So, you know, and just thinking about, you know, it sounds like you had a lot of time to be in your head by yourself.
Yep.
And kind of retreated from a lot of social interaction.
Yeah, totally.
And that kind of disconnection and isolation is not what we're made for.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So I find that often is a part of the problem of what brings us to that place of feeling insane.
Yeah.
It can be a result, or it can be a cause, or both.
Right, or both.
Yeah, and probably it was both in my situation.
Why do you think you started to feel like that? Why did you draw away from people?
I don't know. Because I was no longer experiencing, you know, these, I don't know what to call them, revelations. Visions, you know, that I had, they were starting to come more and more, less and less frequently, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to talk to them about them with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this was a small town out west, and anybody talked about, you know, having visions of God as he's hiking out in the wilderness is, you know, it's going to be seen as Looney Tunes. and there was just no one I could talk to, and I didn't know that I needed someone to talk to. You know, I didn't have a spiritual guide, or know that I needed a spiritual guide.
So you were really feeling very, very alone at that point.
Yeah, I was a mess. I couldn't hold down a job or anything.
Yeah.
You mentioned you did some dream work. Was that helpful for you?
Well, initially it was not, in the sense that the doctor would read through my dreams out loud, and he'd underline places, and he'd ask me about some things, and I think he kind of was hoping that I would respond to something, or it would bring out something deep inside of me that I could relate to, as you know, this is a symbol of something.
Mm-hmm.
This is symbolizing something deep in your subconscious that needs to get out, and you need to be able to objectify it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I didn't say much of anything, he would sometimes make a suggestion that maybe here's what it's saying, and I would just kind of, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, you know, without really being able to participate much. So I have to say that they didn't help me a lot, but I did all those dream journals. And about 10 years later, I read through them again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wow, look at all that symbolism, you know, and how did I not get that?
So you had the language to understand it 10 years later.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I studied a good deal of religion and psychology, you know, Carl Jung and people like that. And so, yeah.
Neat.
And so, yeah.
We were talking about you while you temporarily left the show. about how did you stumble onto Teilhard de Chardin? I mean, how did you get going reading on that?
Yeah, purely surreptitious. I had been reading, and I came across the name of Paul Tillich, something
oh, yeah.
that he had read. And that it sounded really interesting. So I went mm-hmm. to my local public library to mm-hmm. find a book on, you know, some books by Paul Tillich. And there were some there. But and this was back in the day when the library was organized by the author's last name. Well, Teilhard was right before Tillich. And so I saw some of his books, you know, the Phenomenon of Man and The Divine Milieu and Hymn of the Universe. And I just started kind of perusing them, you know, serendipitously. And I thought, oh, this is really interesting. So I checked those out and then didn't check out Tillich. And I just fell in love with them. You know, I've written somewhere that Teilhard colonized my mind for about 10 or 15 years of my life. You know, I mean, his spot still influences me a lot, even though I can see a lot of flaws in it now, but I still like his work.
So you found it through a library cataloging system.
Yes. God works in mysterious ways.
And the Holy Spirit working, yes, in mysterious ways, indeed. Indeed. So do you have a tidbit that you'd like to read to us?
Do I have a what? I'm sorry.
Do you have a segment that you would like to read so we can hear some of your...
Well, I'll read... I'm going to read the first two paragraphs of the prologue.
Wonderful.
And I kind of mentioned them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called In the Land of Disappearing Rivers. This began as a poem, but I was a lousy poet, so I just kind of took away the gratuitous line breaks and made it into prose. So, ocean once lived here, years ago, in the lap of high mountains. It filled valleys to the brim, and life teemed in its deep waters. Then it drained away through a weak point breach, leaving a vast desert of slow growth and silence. A pilgrim river winds its way through the desert now, struggling sometimes just to be a river. It meanders slowly, searching for ocean, then evaporates or disappears into the ground. Now and then, a welling up or a cloudburst floods the basin, satisfying river, then subsides. The high water marks of ocean are visible up among old bristle pine trees that grow on dry hillsides, gathering wisdom. The ancient tree remember Abraham's long journey and a promise. They wait patiently. The river makes a long bend, then continues on its way, watering the land as it can. So that's kind of the setup for the book. And then at the end of the book, if I could, can I cite one more
Please.
Thing?
Please, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at a place in Western Maryland where I used to go every summer, nearby where we lived in Frostburg, Maryland. And there's been a lot of destruction in the forest there because of the Hurricane Sandy the mm-hmm. previous October.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I'm just kind of searching around, you know, the trees and measuring them, and clearing out a space that I like to sit and read and write in. And I'm just kind of reflecting on my life as an older man. And then I write this, and this is the ending of the book. This is a stream that, unlike the ones in, first of all, is back as background, unlike the rivers and streams in the Great Basin Desert, the ones out east, and, you know, in the Allegheny and the Appalachian Mountains, reach the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
They're tributaries of this, and then which is the tributary of that, and then the Chesapeake Bay and then the ocean. So anyway, if you live as this stream lives, meandering here, surging strongly there, resting now in deep pools, if you descend gratefully to the valley floor, where you flow contemplatively, contemplatively in the meadowlands until you merge peaceably with the great Pilgrim River. Then you leave your business well. But if you're stubborn, like the old tree trunk that years ago fell across the stream, blocking its course and gathering debris, then the water will, regardless, find its way around and through you. Even if you resist, pushing back in protest, the stream will smoothen your rough edges. Day by day, it carries away more of the coarse bark, then seeps through the small cracks, softening even the heartwood, that tough inner core, until your molecules, one by one, float away, mingling with the current. Then, old log, you will join the stream and freely glide home to ocean. And that's how it ends.
Very nice. Love it.
And that, my friends, is why you need to get Pilgrim River and read it from beginning to end. It's one of the few books that I've read beginning to end again.
I'm notorious for half reading. I do that a lot too, so I get it.
But yours was so compelling, and it really, you know, you share from the heart. You share with a lot of transparency and honesty about your childhood and upbringing. Also, your family life, if your family grew, and you know, just some of your personal struggles. And so, I just want to thank you for your authenticity and for sharing from the heart. It really tells your story beautifully, and I have no doubt that God uses it to encourage those in their faith and also bring others to faith.
Well, thank you. I hope so. Yeah, but thank you for those kind words. It's been a real honor for me to be here talking to you all.
Do you have any final questions for Ken, Fred?
Oh, I got a lot. I can keep Ken here for a couple hours.
Well, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I was really interested in the title of this podcast. The Tangled Knot, is that it?
That is correct.
Yeah, and then it refers to Mary, the untangler of knots.
Yes.
I had never heard that before.
And so that's Mary,
it's such a beautiful metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
How cool. It's such a fascinating concept and a beautiful metaphor.
It really is. Mary, undoer of knots, is, you know, when you think of how we have so many knots in our lives. And as counselors, we deal with those on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, and so I often pray to Mary, undoer of knots, for my clients. Look up the image, Ken. The image is spectacularly beautiful. It's in bright cobalt blues and deep red. And it's a really stunning image of Our Lady. And it's a devotion that Pope Francis made popular because it's one of his favorites as well.
And what's the name of the painting?
Mary, Undoer of Knots.
Oh, Mary, Undoer of Knots. Okay.
Yes. And so that is the origin of the show's name.
Yeah, I love that. I love Mary. In fact, I have three icons of Mary on my wall that I look at when I look up from my desk. And they're, you know, they're not traditional kind of classic icons. They were all painted by a local artist. But I just love them. And,
well, thank you very much for being here, Ken. Thank you, Deb, for another inspiring show. We have reached the end of our time. But remember, this is a joint production of the Four Persons Blog and St. Barnabas Reconciliation Ministries, a nonprofit Catholic company dedicated to reconciling all people to each other and to God. We invite you to come most every week. It will be on at the same time, Monday at 7 o'clock. This is a recorded program, but do send us any questions at stbarn.org or stbarn@protonmail.com. Good night, everybody. God bless.
Blessings. Thanks again, Ken.
Good night. And,
good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, Fred. Good night.
Yeah. Bye.
You just heard The Tangle Knot with Deb Rojas on the Four Persons Network. Real sound Catholic counseling that helps us to fulfill the greatest commandment to love God with our whole heart, our whole soul, our whole strength, and, yes, our whole mind. We will see you next week for another wonderful show with Deb Rojas. The Four Persons Inc. is a registered 501c3 nonprofit. All rights reserved. Any unauthorized use of this content without the permission of the Four Persons Inc. and our hosts is prohibited and subject to legal action. Thank you.